From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment, the home edition. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest, in addition to being nominated for Outstanding Lead Actor for the Emmy for the series, miniseries, Halston on Netflix, I think of him as being someone who is an actor kind of in his most well-known roles embodies swagger, from Kurt Wilde to maybe Obi-Wan Kenobi to Mark in Trainspotting, even Alex in Shallow Grave, and maybe half of Fargo. Of course, I'm talking to Ewan McGregor. Ewan, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Elvis. It's nice to be on your show.
You know, it's funny, but I think about so much of this, these characters you played, being these guys who do have a relationship to swagger. And I wonder, you found so many different ways of playing that and often showing us the anxiety that comes from trying to create that. And I wonder if that's something you find yourself gravitating towards.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny. I don't see any sort of through line in the parts I play. And I'm sure there must be, but it's probably not helpful for me to look for it. I'm just drawn to my gut instinct. That's all I'm led by. You know, if I read something and I'm like, yeah, got to be in there. If you start imagining yourself in it as you're reading the script, and I've got a good imagination, and when I'm reading a script, I really see the movie it could be. And that's it, really. I don't know. I don't have expectations or things to look for other than just my gut instinct, you know?
I guess I find myself thinking just with so many of these characters, I'm even thinking, you know, Moulin Rouge or certainly Velvet Goldmine, but Pillow Book, so many of these characters who have like a presentational side and then another side that they don't show to a whole lot of people. And that trying to play out that dichotomy, that schism these people have, and again, how much anxiety that can provoke for them is something I think of you as doing as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, I think it's true of our lives, isn't it? That we have public lives and private lives, and they can be two very different things, you know. And I think in terms of Halston, you know, the series that we just did last year, there's a character who very much had huge sort of public life, was always photographed, always on the red carpet, always Studio 54 and fashion events, and sort of curated a very public persona, if you like, had an incredible accent, which was somewhat worked upon, I suppose, and a look, and, you know, the fact that he would turn up with his Halstonettes, you know, he'd turn up to events with five or six supermodels with him always. He lived the life. He lived his private life, his public life, you know, to the max. But then there was a very private side to him as well. And when you're exploring a character like him in a film or a TV series, what's interesting is seeing those both sides of that person's life. That was interesting for me. I mean, in a way, I felt, you know, his private life was very private. And so I wondered if I was doing him an injustice by sort of showing it to the world, you know. But I guess if you're playing somebody and you decide that you're going to play somebody, you know, sort of celebrate someone's life by telling their story, then you have to show both sides of that.
I was thinking about that too, because in the cases where you played, you know, characters based on real life people like Halston or James Joyce, I found myself thinking about the way you use your voices, those characters, and the Halston voice in this series, we get to see that persona you're talking about evolve, which must have been the joy of getting to play it, where there's a brashness that's just performance that becomes kind of the real person during the Studio 54 days. But the literal and figurative voice of these real life characters is something I find really interesting.
Yeah, it's something you can grab hold of. You know, I can go out and I can find at the click of a button on my laptop, you know, hours of footage of Halston talking on chat shows and interviews. And so I can really get my teeth into that. You know, there's something I can absolutely work on to become him, if you like, for the role. There were some recordings of Joyce, James Joyce, when I played Joyce. I played another real life character called Nick Gleason in a film called Rogue Trader years ago. He was a British trader who brought down Barings Bank, which was the Queen's Bank in Britain. And he is a real life character. So I had recordings of him. The other one that springs to mind is what I'm doing at the moment. I'm shooting the Star Wars series at the moment. And, you know, back in 90, whenever it was, 96 or whenever we shot the first one, I forget, I had to be playing Alec Guinness as a young man. So I was watching a lot of Alec Guinness movies, and I found some amazing pieces of work that he was really one of Britain's finest and most prolific actors, you know, of his day, unbelievable talent. And I was lucky enough to be playing the young version of him. So I've been doing that again lately. And partly the way of doing that is, you know, not trying to do an impersonation of his voice, but just trying to do my version, you know, what Alec Guinness might have been like as a young Obi-Wan Kenobi, as opposed to the one that we know, you know, when he was an older man.
It's the treatment, by the way. We're talking voices of my guest Emmy nominee Ewan McGregor for Halston. It's funny because you talking about that, I think about voice, and I was, as you were mentioning doing Alec, I was thinking about how there's a kind of a almost musical meter to it. You slow it down, we can sort of get the sense of the breathing and that there's nothing rushed. But with Halston, it's like the more ruthless he got, the faster the voice got. It's almost like a machine gun fire, but really precise machine gun fire.
Yeah, I think he was very connected to his words, and his, when he was angry, I think it was like super focused. You know, he was able to be very precise about tearing somebody down, you know, or finding a cruel thing to say. You know, when he was artistically threatened or creatively threatened, or, you know, that area where commerce meets art, which is, you know, certainly a sort of murky waters in the business I'm in, and movie making, and when the money and the art collide, it's always a tricky place to be. And I think that he had the same experience. He liked very much being successful, and he liked very much the fame that it brought him and the money that it brought him. But at the same time, he didn't like and wouldn't let somebody who was a non-creative person tell him how to design, or wouldn't stand for somebody putting their input in about his clothing. And in those moments, he was able to be incredibly cutting and express his anger in a very cold, nasty way.
Do you think about that when you're taking on roles, about what the character should sound like? Because as we were talking, I was thinking about how we can feel, interestingly, given the state he was in the end of his life, in the last episode, how he's taking more time in this weird way that there's been this 180 where he's going back to being the Roy Halston of the beginning, where he's taking life in and he's capable of being excited. And there's something really interestingly kind of boyish about that.
It's all pretty instinctive when you're acting. You know, I think for me, I've always liked, and I always had to do accents. You know, I've played only a handful of Scottish characters in my career, and so I'm often, you know, doing an accent, and I like it. So it's very much part of a character. Building a character for me is what they sound like, but a lot of that work is done before you start filming. And with Halston, there was a bunch of different interviews that I liked to listen of his, and then I just got them to remove all of the interviewers' voices. So I had this, I would say in the old days, a tape. I had a file on my phone of just Halston answering questions. So it's sort of nonsensical, but it's funny to listen to because it's just him rambling on and on and on and on, and you don't have any of the questions. So it's really fun to listen to. So I would have that, so I could just tap into, if I needed to, I could tap back into him. And sometimes I wouldn't for days or weeks. And then I would feel like, oh my God, am I still doing him? Am I still close? And I would tap back into that file on my phone, and then I would remind myself of him. And I sort of do the same thing with Alec Guinness at work on the Star Wars. I need to touch base with him every week or so, just to make sure I'm not getting too far. And I, you know, I'm not doing an impersonation of Alec Guinness, but I do want my Obi-Wan to become him when he's an older man. So I do want to make sure that I'm getting that right, you know. You know, it's an important part of who a character is, how they speak. But I would say, to answer your question, by the time you're on set, you know, shooting, you're not really thinking too much about it. It's just coming out of your mouth. This should be quite, it's like lines. You're not really, you know, you shouldn't be trying to remember your lines. You should just be saying your lines because you know them, you know.
Yeah, it's so funny as we're talking here, just again, thinking about the presentational aspect of so many of these characters. And we really get to see all that back and forth between Halston, because he lived a life so publicly, many of us assume that his public life and private life had to be the same. But he's playing this character. And again, I was just thinking about not only the accent, but the size of the voice too. And like, you know, when he's going through the worst of the coke mania, the voice is too loud for some of the rooms. Mm. And he's not aware that in some ways he's not performing, because this is his assistant, who's the person he's closest to, and he doesn't have to be that, but he's on stage standing under proscenium even for her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sassy. Yeah, it's interesting. I love hearing people's observations of it. The idea of him creating his persona is an interesting one for me playing him, because I feel like the idea of creating a persona infers that it's not true, somehow that it's not real, that this is not really who you are. You're pretending, you're faking it. I always really feel like that is who he is. You know, his accent, that he's somewhat sort of, he wouldn't have spoken like that when he was a wee boy at home. So there is a creation of it, a sort of a self-awareness of it. But at the same time, I do believe that that's who he really was. You know, who he created is really who Halston was. So, and I think that's the case for a lot of extrovert or even introvert sort of creative people, is it doesn't mean that you're not that person. It doesn't mean that there's something fake about it. That's exactly who he was. It's just that he sort of became it through over the years. And what was fun for me was to try and keep it real as he went forward, so that the accent became more grand the older he got, you know. And then what did he sound like when the cameras weren't there? You know, what was he like in those scenes with Liza Minnelli, where he's just him and Liza having dinner together? That was fun to try and find him in those moments. And I found this great footage of him in Detroit. Now, there was a fashion museum or a museum in Detroit somewhere, probably in the 80s, I think, or 70s or 80s, I think. And he went to the opening of this museum and he presented them with four or five of his original works, you know, his original gowns, and gave a little speech on stage. And they did a fashion show. Him and the Halstonettes went up there and he filmed it all. He had somebody film it all. So there's footage of him in the airport in New York, getting on the plane, in the plane, getting to the museum. It's just shot everything. But my favorite bit was backstage during the fashion show. Halston's backstage in the dark. And I always imagined he might be quite tense or nervous or, you know, uptight while the fashion show was going on. But he was totally relaxed and very funny. And he was behind this curtain there, cigarette in hand, drink in hand, sort of chatting away with all the models, making them laugh, definitely flirting with the cameraman who was shooting it. And it was so fun. It was just, I really saw, and there it was very much, even though there was a camera present, it did feel very like the private Halston. It felt like the real him, you know.
Yeah, because it sounds like what you're saying is he basically created this thing that he became, this thing he always wanted to be, in effect. So he says, this is Halston, TM. Then eventually, if I play this part long enough, I'll become it.
I don't feel like he was playing a part. I don't feel like he was playing a role. I think he's sort of, that's who he was, you know. He lived in the fashion world. His whole life and creative drive was about fashion, about making beautiful things. That's where he lived his life. You know, it's no wonder that he ended up, you know, became a real regular at Studio 54, which was such a melting pot of creative, crazy, wonderful people. And then I think it's no wonder that he ended up being really, you know, when people think of Studio 54, they think of him.
So we'll take a break. My guess is Emmy nominee Ewan McGregor for his lead role in Halston. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. We're talking persona versus the real person with my guest, Emmy nominee Ewan McGregor. Most recent role for most of us is playing Halston in Halston. And one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking about all this, especially that footage of him being backstage for this show, is that so often when he was, as you were playing, as when he was talking to people, he's almost talking as if he were speaking to an audience. Often he would speak to somebody. You were talking about that stuff with Liza. He's not quite looking at her, but kind of presenting himself to be listened to. He's almost turned himself into something kind of sort of feline and regal at the same time, where he's there to be regarded, but he's not distant from the conversation. He's not there just to have an audience. But I thought that was really interesting, that posture that you have him assume as he starts to really ascend to becoming the Halston that he, as you're saying, he always was.
Yeah. It's interesting. His friendship, his love with Liza was really one of the great best friend stories of all time. I mean, they were such brilliant friends and sort of brought out the best of each other, I think. And I was lucky to play those scenes with Krista Rodriguez. And she's just so wonderful. She doesn't do an impersonation of Liza, but she really just becomes her. And she was so brilliant. Her first scene that she shot on Halston was the performance of Liza with a Z, which is the first time that Halston meets her, sees her. And I'd met her, obviously, in rehearsals, and we'd done some read-throughs and stuff. But really, I hadn't acted with her until me and David Pitou sat down in the audience of this little dining theater club type set. And Krista came out and did that whole number and just took the house down. She was so brilliant. And I was thinking, oh, my God, this is her. This is great. And, you know, throughout the series is this backbone of their friendship. And there's sort of a, he's not like that with any of the other characters in this. There's a band of players, you know. Elsa Peretti was a great love of his. He designed with her. She was a great jewelry designer, but she designed his perfume bottle and was one of his models in the early days. And they had a long-standing friendship, but there was something very special about his relationship with Liza.
There was, and one of my favorite scenes in the show where he invites her over to dinner and he's had dinner delivered, basically something he could have made in his own kitchen, plays almost like screwball comedy in that way. I mean, there's something so stylized about the way these two people are in real life. Yeah. Talk about playing that scene, because it's two things happening at once. It's the real world and two people who, next to Halston, Liza Minnelli seems like a regular person. So there's a lot going on there.
That's a funny line. I think he brings her over because he's just finished this amazing townhouse in New York City, a beautiful modern building. And he bought and absolutely designed the inside of. And he's worried that she doesn't like, you know, they're having dinner together. He's worried that she doesn't like his style that's quite modern, and he worries that she thinks it's too cold. He's like, well, I don't care, I love it, you know. But they're just like brother and sister, really. They're honest with each other, I think, you know. And then the scenes where when Liza goes off to get sober, she's trying to get Halston to realize that he needs to do the same thing, that he would benefit from trying to help himself in that regard. There's something very like a sort of brother and sister about it. They're quite, you don't have to mince words with each other, you know?
But also two people who, though they can see each other, they can't quite see themselves. They fascinatingly lack a kind of self-awareness that, again, in some way, in that scene, and others too, becomes kind of comic for me in some ways. And I wondered if that was part of the fun of playing some guy who has created this thing and basically sort of is standing like kind of a head above everybody, but doesn't quite see himself in some way, that if that lack of self-awareness that he has sometimes, because in lots of ways he's completely self-aware, but in some fundamental ways he's not.
I didn't really consider that, to be honest, while we were playing. I mean, it wasn't a meant thing to try and make fun of that in any way.
No, I wasn't saying you were making fun of it. I just thought that it's because he was a stylized person. So you're almost playing somebody who feels like he stepped out of a 30s movie in his way. And that was the sense I got from watching, watching old interviews, that he watched lots of old movies. You can see the way he held the cigarette and the lighter and the way he held his head up, that he was almost seemed to be always aware where the light was in some like almost old fashioned movie star way.
Oh yeah. That's how he was. But I don't know that he was copying. I don't know. I'm not sure that he was copying some old movie stars. I think he just was a great star himself, you know, and he was grand, you know. There was something about working in fashion and in designing dresses for people to wear out and about in special occasions. And there's a sort of grandness to that. You're designing beautiful gowns, you know, that's sort of who he was, you know. I don't know that he was copying anybody. I don't think so.
I was thinking too, and watching some of that stuff is, and again, we're talking about this sort of idea of people having presentational sides, showing one side, not showing another. For some reason, I was thinking about, you know, Catch Your Block as I was watching some of this stuff, you know, watching anything of what you did in Down With Love.
That's true. There's something similar about them. Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about it. Yeah, Catch Your Block's a bit like that, yeah.
I guess for me, the best parts of the show are like watching when he's working with his hands. We see him get lost in something, or at Versailles when he's kind of inventing this thing in real time as it's falling apart in front of him. And that problem-solving aspect of him was really interesting to me.
That was the key thing for me, was I couldn't let those scenes be unbelievable. You know, the thing that, regardless of whether people I spoke to loved Halston or didn't, they all said that when he worked with a piece of fabric, there was no one like that. He could take a piece of material and make a beautiful garment out of it, draping and cutting. And so I had to get that right. You know, I just had to have, I got lots of lessons in how to drape. And I spent a lot of time in the wardrobe department with people, you know, showing me how he might have done it, and watching him fitting. There's lots of footage of him from his workshops. You know, he liked to have his world sort of captured on film. So there's lots of footage of him fitting models and looking in the mirror, standing behind a model, looking in the mirror, turning her round, looking at different angles, but always this intense stare in the mirror. And I wanted, of all of it, I wanted to respect the fact that he was really amazing when it came to making clothing. So I had a lot of good help there. I didn't want Ewan McGregor's hands, like, pinning a garment. I wanted Halston's.
Because I think it's interesting, too, by say Savoy, is the treatment. We're talking hands with, I guess, Ewan McGregor, who's nominated for an Emmy for his lead role in the Netflix series Halston. But that concentration, too, I mean, we're so aware that that's when, to me, in effect, he becomes Halston, when he basically is able to move everything else out of the way. Now, you were talking about Alec Guinness, and we were aware of that sort of concentration he was able to bring to bear, especially in playing Obi-Wan Kenobi, these kind of moments where we can see that these characters believe what's in front of them, and it makes us believe it too, even though it hasn't quite been created yet. We're watching Halston create, we're watching, to some extent, Obi-Wan sort of create confidence in people he's talking to. And that's an interesting thing to get to play, because it seems like it's kind of a magical thing to do.
Yeah, it is a magical. I mean, I think that's when you're playing somebody who's creatively excellent at something, that moment when they're doing that thing is what makes them, you know what I mean? That's what makes him tick. And in a way, that's when he was happy. He talked about it in lots of his interviews, creating dresses, you know, at 3 a.m. with a piece of fabric and a pair of scissors sitting at home on his carpet, just playing and often alone. I think he liked to work and create alone. He didn't really like all the noise and busyness of people around. I mean, I think, and that's why also why he would lose his temper when he was working, because probably wasn't able to achieve that space that he needed to create, you know, with all the trappings of business and the pressures of like creating countless lines of different things, handbags, shoes, socks, underwear, hats, even carpets, and all the different lines of Halston goods that he was sort of crushed by it in the end, just by his own success in a way.
But guys, as you're talking about these things too, I was just thinking that's one of the things that I was mentioning before about when that precision comes in, because when he gets really angry, rather than shouting the voice, even though he gets a little bit louder, but it's so precise and such an interesting flurry of words, and so much of that comes too to these points where he just kind of wants to clear his head and have some time to himself, and so few people around him in that circle seem to understand that.
Yeah. Well, I think he was difficult. I'm sure it was, the more the work piled up, the more I can imagine that was a bit of a downward spiral. So, you know, he was going out to Studio 54, staying out late, coming to work late, the pressures of everybody going, you haven't done this, you haven't done this, you haven't done this, sort of making him flee back out, back into Studio 54, back, you know, so you can imagine the sort of downward spiral of that, I think. And, you know, there was a lot of money at stake and they were paying him a lot of money. So they wanted their goods. You know, I think the other thing about him was this perfectionism, the fact that he just wouldn't allow anyone else to design any of it. Like, he could have stayed on top of it by letting other people design different things, like have another designer do a range of sportswear, a range of casual things, you know, but he had to do it all because he had his name on it. And I respect that. I totally understand that. But in the end, I think it was just too much. Couldn't keep up.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of the sad part of it. You know, he's got his name on so much stuff, but he is so meticulous and so specific. And is also, I think, this for him, this exercise of ego. If he says he's going to do it, he should be able to do it. But the fact is also, he's got his name on these things, and his name doesn't belong to him by the end.
Yeah, that was the sort of cruel twist at the end, yeah, that it was sold away from him. But it's like that in business now. I mean, it's just unusual with Halston. There weren't designers like him when he started out. Just nowadays, of course, it's much more normal, that kind of idea. But I mean, I don't know. In our series anyway, he trusts the business people he's in business with, and they allow him the freedom and the space to be the creative person he was. So he probably didn't keep his eye on the ball very much in terms of contracts and what he was signing. And I can understand that too. And then, you know, when it came to it in the end, he wasn't allowed to use his own name anymore.
I mean, yeah, we now see we are the point where designers sign their names out and then they don't own their names and they're replaced by other people. But I guess I was just thinking too with this, one of my favorite scenes is when he gets a chance to trust somebody, and that you have that great scene where he's signing on and he's making this big deal. And you got the great scene with Bill Pullman, who's playing somebody who Halston sort of trusts. That's one of the few times we get to see that he can allocate and let other people do things when it's the right person. And this is a person he believes in. To see Halston going from being somebody who creates, and we watch this thing happening in real time, to him watching somebody create something for him, to watch the power dynamic shift in that way in that scene is really interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, Mahoney was his business partner and took care of business, but there was never any influence of the actual fashion wear that he was making from Mahoney. I mean, you see what happens in the series when Mahoney tries to get Halston to make jeans, because jeans became such a huge market. And Mahoney's like saying, you've got to make jeans, and Halston won't do it. It's just, he just won't do it. Says Balenciaga didn't make jeans. And because he's too grand, he's too highbrow for jeans, you know, but he misses that. He misses the boat there, and by the time he decides to do it, it's too late. So Mahoney was definitely somebody that he trusted and was like took care of the financial side of things so that he didn't have to think about it.
Well, I can't thank you enough for doing this. You're running out of time. I guess it's Ewan McGregor, who I hope got to keep his Tom Brown outfits from Stay. His newest project we know him from, of course, is playing Halston in the Netflix series Halston. Ewan, again, thank you so much for doing this.
Nice to speak to you. I hope to speak to you again.
Our production staff includes Desmond Taylor. Hi, Desmond. Paul Smith and John Meeks. The show is edited by producer Rebecca Mooney. To better days, everybody. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.